Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Set in 1962 at a quantum mechanics conference in an isolated lodge nestled amidst the towering landscape of the Swiss Alps, The Universal Theory is the story of a gifted young physicist, his curmudgeonly mentor, and an enigmatic jazz pianist who knows things about this wunderkind scientist he's never told another living soul. The film is called The Universal Theory, and we're joined today by the writer and director, and that would be Tim Krueger. Tim, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The film stylistically is beautiful to look at. It feels very much like there's a homage or there's a reference to German filmmaking of the 1920s and the look of it, the feel of it, but it's certainly a very modern feeling storyline. And tell me a little bit about what inspired you to make The Universal Theory.
I guess this is the film that I wanted to put everything in that I always dreamed about as a kid, dreaming about making films. I joke a bit that sometimes maybe I learned this from George Lucas, because all the commercially successful projects he had were based on things he liked as a kid, basically. And I did. We did the same. Obviously, it's not as entertaining as Raiders of the Lost Ark, but this film is kind of my version of that, you know, a journey to the past, a very strange character, a German character, a journey into the past of cinema as well, and into a dream logic. I felt needed to be like the dream logic in cinema can be entered by, you know, alluding to our memory image of cinema, because I think cinema has shaped the way we dream, and dreams have shaped cinema. So, and they are so intrinsically intertwined, and the films and cinema has always been the most interesting to me when it feels most like a dream. And yeah, I wanted to make a film once where that really felt like that. And I guess the film does feel like a gothic nightmare a bit, where you don't know what happens next, where you don't know what reality is. But, you know, reality sometimes has that way of leaving you in the dark as well. And I was in a place like that for a while. And so we made a film about it, which, I'm never making a black and white film again.
Please tell me if this is unfair, an unfair comparison, but watching it, it feels like your intent is to throw us off the trail as often as we're on the trail, and to what the meaning of much of what the film is about. The film that kept coming back to me is Darren Aronofsky's first film, Pi.
I watched it when I was 16 years old, and I guess it entered my brain and never quite left. Maybe you can track this film back to that moment when I saw Pi, but you can also track it back to so many other films.
Yeah.
And the funny thing that happens is usually with film critics, but also friends and people I met who saw the film, they come up to me and said, "Oh, you had such a beautiful quote and reference to this and that film." And usually it would be a film that I've never heard of. I guess there's hundreds of film memories in here, and we quite consciously didn't look at the films that we had in mind. We never watched them again, but tried to emulate our memory image of what it felt like, basically, in all disciplines, in all, you know, in cinematography, in the music, in the way the acting and the writing works. We just kind of danced with it.
I was just thinking about it, having watched the film and just sort of mulling over what it meant, what it is, and what it's about. And it struck me that in the world that we often inhabit when we watch a film, as opposed to the life we live outside of watching that film, is the difference between an acquired memory, which is what film is. It's an acquired memory, somebody else's images that you're taking in, and our own life, which is our our stock library of memories, what we remember, what we know, what we think we know. And I feel like this film really kind of weaves in and out of that particular, for me, that particular idea of the acquired memories with our own mm-hmm. memories. And I just thought it did a fantastic job of doing that. Does that resonate? Does that sound?
Yeah, but it makes me think, because just on the last interview we did on this film, we talked about the collective unconscious. I don't know if you believe in that concept.
Yeah, I do.
I do. I mean, I'm not sure if I do, but sometimes I do. And I guess the thing that comes closest to a working collective unconscious is cinema. But I wouldn't necessarily agree that cinema gives us only acquired memories, because I think we remember films because of what they do with us and in us. So they already move something that is pre-existing in our own psyche, I suppose. If a film doesn't do that, we might have watched it, but we don't quite remember it the same way. So yeah, that would be my little qualification of what you said.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about our main character, Johannes, and how we're introduced to him. And
we've seen this kind of character before. Like, he's a physicist, or a soon-to-be doctor of physics, as we understand. And he's working on his doctor's thesis, but not quite getting anywhere. And what I mean by we've seen this character already, like, we've seen so many heroes' journeys where somebody is not quite ready to, you know, to enter the adult world. And this guy, he's already 32 or something, but he certainly isn't an adult. He's more like a young Luke Skywalker entering a train to Switzerland, where there's a physics congress, which doesn't necessarily require his presence, but he's just tagging along, basically. But he turns out, or at least he thinks that way, he turns out to be key to the happenings there in that hotel and underneath that hotel. I guess that's my little introduction. And
yeah,
he's a blank slate, as someone else called it. He's also a genius, and at the same time, he's a bit of an idiot. And the film is never quite clear on its own stance towards its main character. And I guess that's what makes the film feel less American in its narrative than you might expect.
The actor who plays Jonas Lienhardt, and that's Jan Bülow.
Jan Bülow, yeah.
He does a wonderful job of embodying all of the angst and all of the uncertainty and all of the brashness and all of the things that he believes to be true. He does a wonderful job of being that character. So I just my hat's off to him.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I had a lot of fun with him. He's a bit of a rock star in Germany, or at least the way he behaves makes him feel like you're dealing with a rock star, because he's an extrovert. He has a lot of charisma. He's a very loud person. I love him. And we work together on toning him down, or almost reversing his psychology for a bit. Because obviously this character I had in mind was an introvert, wasn't quite ready to deal with the world on his own terms. He's much more concerned with things of the mind than with the body. But Jan Bülow, he had a great actor's instinct of moving in that kind of very dark and narrow tunnel. Because I suppose it can be quite hard for an actor, but he was so generous with it, and also he had great instinct. It was a great fun for me to watch and witness, and yeah, to lead him down that little path.
Yeah, and the cast throughout, I mean, all of the different characters in here, Professor Henry Blumberg, Julius Straten, and then, of course, Karen Honig, are all the people who play him. Olivia Ross plays Karen. I mean, mm-hmm. Karen Honig.
Kavi, you would say in Germany. So
okay.
She's a kind of half German, half French character I had in mind, because, you know, like in places like Strasbourg, which is a kind of half German, half French city where people speak both languages, I figured I always had a character in mind that had both backgrounds and also has a Jewish background, which is only alluded to in some scenes. She was quite special, and we found Olivia Ross through my casting director. She was at the end of a very long list, but I just saw her face, and then I talked to her on Skype. Back then we used Skype. You remember Skype before the pandemic?
Yes, I do.
It's amazing how they lost the game if they already owned the verb employed to describe
yes,
the
Skyping, they, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. And they lost it. You're right.
Wow, amazing. Can you imagine? Anyway, we talked on Skype and I never looked back. Like there wasn't a real casting process. It was just she flew to Berlin and we've been friends ever since, and she was also crucial in making the French scenes work because I don't speak French. So I had to trust her translation to some degree. Obviously we had a translation, but also she worked on the language a bit, and she was, I guess, great at directing herself in those scenes. And she was, obviously she's only a small part of the film, but she was always there.
Very powerful.
I guess you could say from a narrative standpoint that her story in the film is far more interesting and unusual than the, I guess, classical male perspective. But this film being a classical film noir, at least in the beginning, we had to tell it from the wrong side, as it were.
Yes. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. She is a presence in the film that she's a captivating presence in the film. I just felt like this is very tricky to tell this story in the, because it does shift narrative perspectives and who's doing what and when and how. But throughout, the cast, which has to be very sober in making mm-hmm. that work, they really did. I thought they did a great job. You did a great job in directing them in that regard.
I had such good fun with the ensemble cast, basically, because it's there's so many different characters. And obviously, it's not a classical actor's film. Like, the film relies so much more on atmosphere and cinematography and music than on acting. But I wanted these characters who are kind of comic characters, you know, like graphic novel characters. They're a bit simple in the way they're set up, but also to make them feel real in a historical sense, that the kind of psychology that they employ, that it's based on something that we know. Maybe you saw that in the film. I don't know.
Yeah, I did. I felt like it did. And just, I want to remind our listeners that we're speaking with Tim Kruger, and the film is called Universal Theory, and it is coming out here in Los Angeles on October 11th. Be looking for this. It's a wonderful kind of, if you love cinema, which hopefully if you're listening to Film School Radio, you do, this is your film. This is the kind of film that you seek, that you don't often get a chance to actually experience, because it is a cinematic experience for sure. And I want to take a bit of a jump here from your background as a cinematographer and now director working with a cinematographer. What is that? Obviously, you don't know how important that is in the production and making of a good film. You're the relationship between a director and a cinematographer. Let's talk about that and because the film is beautiful to look at. So I would love to talk a little bit about your work with your cinematographer in this.
I mean, we are natural collaborators. My DOP is called Roland Stuprich. He's half Romanian, half German. And he has a wonderful mind, because I tend to talk a lot and I tend to intellectualize things. I don't like talking about concepts so much, but sometimes I get, you know, lost in my own labyrinth of words, and he doesn't really talk. And I'm not an actor's director, because I guess I think in edited images. I see the scenes as they play out in my mind, and their images and rhythm and the acting kind of follows naturally. We have a relationship where basically most of the time I know where I want to put the camera, but I tell him this and something strange and magical happens, because he he reacts to it in a certain way. And sometimes he says, oh, this is not possible. No, where should I put the lamps on the lights? And he's very grumpy. He's wonderful to be around because we don't have to talk that much. It's almost telepathic. And I don't know, we how do you say, whatever I'm not good at, he is good at, and the other way around. So we are kind of two cinematographers working together on the look of the film and how the camera moves through the
scene.
That's
wonderful. He sounds a little bit like the character in the film, Dr. Julius Stoughton.
He is a bit like that, but he's younger, and I'm not afraid of him because quite small, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, this experience as a filmmaker, this is a bit of a leap of faith, the way that you went about making this film. What are you taking away from this experience in making The Universal Theory?
Oh, to take away, I mean, I'm never doing a black and white film again because the world that you have to live in for so many years, it feels dark. I mean, especially in this film, it feels a bit like a nightmare. I mean, you said earlier that my intention seems to be to throw the audience off as often as possible. That's not quite the intention, but I guess the film happened that way because I always wanted to make a film which raises a lot more questions than it offers answers. And I guess I did that with this film. Maybe I overdid it sometimes. But this film, I think, is very fine for what it is. I always see films as a document of the place you've been in at the time you made it. And I think I was living in that world, and I invite others to enter it 2 hours. And yeah, to take away from it, I mean, the film, I think what the film does quite well, like I talked about it, the film stands on its own character. It's quite ambiguous. Like, you don't really know if it's a genius or an idiot at the same time. If anything, that's what's original about the film, that you never quite know what the film thinks about itself. And I think the film has a sense of self-irony and humor, but also huge pathos and drama, and but it's all in between. It's in between science and esotericism. It's in between the rational and the dream world, I suppose. And that's something that I want to repeat, but maybe on an even more entertaining level next time around.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the work. I really appreciate you spending some time with us. I do want to amend my remarks by saying it's a film you need to lean forward a little bit more than you might usually in watching a film. So that would be the way I would phrase it. It's just that's you need to lean forward a little more. So I want to thank you so very much, Tim Kroeger, for your work here on The Universal Theory. Again, it's being released through Oscilloscope. Wonderful, wonderful film distributors. It'll be here in Los Angeles on October 11th. Be looking for this film. And thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you. You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.